This is Dana Monsees, the nutritionist and Whole30 certified coach behind Real Food with Dana, and you're listening to the Real Talk with Dana podcast. All right, guys, welcome back. We are at episode 10 of the Real Talk with Dana podcast, and I have a super, super juicy episode for you guys today that I know you are going to love. So in January, we were mostly talking about changing your food and listening to your body's response in accordance with those changes, and obviously there was a lot of talk about the Whole30. So now in February, that we have a pretty good idea of how different foods affect your body with a clean slate. Now, as you're enjoying your food freedom, as we like to call it, it's really time to start listening to your body and taking care of yourself in other ways than just besides food, about being more intuitive. And we've got to be honest with ourselves too about what is working for you health-wise and what might not be working for you health-wise now. So 5 years ago, this month was the real start of my intuitive eating journey when I really started to heal myself. So if you're starting or if you're still feeling really low energy at the end of your Whole30 because you just did one in January, there might be something else going on here. And the topic of this episode of is adrenal fatigue real is something that you might want to look a little bit closer into. So in this episode, there's going to be a lot of paradigm-shattering mic drops and knowledge bombs, if you will. I know you're probably thinking right now, okay, back up, Dana. What the actual F? How can you be doing an episode on whether adrenal fatigue exists or if it's even real or not? Because I know you've written a ton of articles and told a lot of stories and done webinars on adrenal fatigue before. So what's going on? And yeah, I actually have done those things. So you might be surprised at what you find in this episode. So just a couple of things that we're going to cover to give you a little bit of spoiler alerts, a little previews into the episode. We're going to talk about what the heck actually is adrenal fatigue, and we're going to talk about the old understanding of the term versus the new understanding, common symptoms and conditions associated with adrenal fatigue, why adrenal fatigue, as we think of it, doesn't actually exist because, spoiler alert, your adrenals aren't actually getting tired and stopping producing cortisol. So we're going to talk about what normal cortisol rhythms are and the body's stress response, what that is supposed to look like, why cortisol and stress are not actually your enemies, and then what is actually happening in the body when we get HPA axis dysregulation, which is the correct scientific term for what we actually call adrenal fatigue, and with that, how your body is trying to protect you, not betray you. Then the last thing is how chronic stress leads to cortisol resistance and HPA axis downregulation. So if you enjoy this episode, please don't forget to go over to iTunes and throw us a 5-star rating. Wow, I can't speak English today. It's fine. 5-star rating and review on iTunes so we can help spread the good food word and tell more people about what we're doing over here. And more importantly, if this episode really connects with you and you're looking for someone to ask more questions about adrenal fatigue, or if you're looking to work with someone who has a lot of experience, both clinically and personally working with adrenal fatigue, I do have a few spots opening up in February for clinical nutrition clients, and I wanted to offer those to you guys first because you are my awesome podcast listeners. So feel free to email me or reach out on Instagram if you are interested. So let's get started with the episode. So if you're listening to this episode today, you've probably heard of this health buzzword called adrenal fatigue. Conventional medicine says it's fake, that it isn't a real diagnosis, and even many well-respected functional medicine practitioners say it's a myth, but everybody says that they have it. And it comes from a place where only functional medicine doctors knew about it a couple of years ago and nobody else believed it. And then it's come all the way to somewhere in popular culture where there are diets and supplements popping up left and right which claim to cure adrenal fatigue because everyone thinks they have it. So in short, and an easy way to understand it, is adrenal fatigue is basically a colloquial term for a shitstorm of nonspecific symptoms associated with hormonal dysfunction that can be traced back to the adrenals and even farther up the hormonal chain of command. So a more accurate term would actually be HPA axis dysregulation, but we will dig into that later. So what are the symptoms that we're dealing with adrenal fatigue or HPA axis dysregulation, whatever you want to call it? So the symptoms are super broad, and they could be anything from sleep disturbances to insomnia to obviously extreme fatigue, low libido, thyroid issues, loss of your menstrual cycle or irregularity of your menstrual cycle, poor exercise tolerance and recovery, joint pain, weak immune function, leaky gut or digestive issues, anxiety and depression, low blood pressure, weight gain, massive blood sugar imbalances, and brain fog, you know, just to name a few of them. And then down the road, if the root cause is left untreated, these symptoms can even evolve into more serious things like hypothyroid tendencies, severe blood sugar dysregulation and insulin resistance, which is sometimes accompanied by PCOS, low immune function and frequent illness, more extreme fatigue, anxiety, and depression, and the list goes on. And the thing is, a lot of the time, these symptoms present in an otherwise healthy person with normal lab test results. So basically, if you're experiencing these, you may go to a doctor and they send you off for a bunch of tests, and then everything comes back within the range. They tell you nothing's wrong and they send you home. Because conventional medicine doesn't recognize the term adrenal fatigue as a real thing. So if you go into a doctor's office and you mention to a general practitioner that you think you may have it, they will probably look at you like you have five heads. If you see a naturopath or if you're familiar with functional medicine, you're definitely familiar with the terms adrenal fatigue, adrenal stress, and adrenal exhaustion, because all these terms are associated with that shitstorm of symptoms that we were talking about before, which are all indicators of dysfunction and breakdown in your body, but at a subclinical level, meaning that they don't show up on lab tests. So one really important thing to understand here, and I kind of referenced this in the intro to the podcast, is that nutrition and the science of nutrition and chronic disease is constantly evolving. So basically, our understanding of certain nutrition concepts and conditions today is probably not going to be the same way that we understand it in 10 years, the same way that we don't understand certain things today the way that we understood them 10 years ago, because our knowledge is constantly evolving. On the other hand, we also know that conventional Western medicine tends to be a little bit slower to keep up with the latest research on more what we call holistic or functional medicine treatment or diagnosis. So why am I saying this? Because in relation to adrenal fatigue, a lot of functional medicine doctors, nutritionists, and everyone else in that realm of medicine had a totally different understanding of adrenal fatigue even just a few years ago, and myself included. Because back then, and you can see I even wrote a couple of blog posts about this explaining the then understanding of adrenal fatigue in my first year of blogging, people mostly understood adrenal fatigue to mean that after being exposed to constant chronic stressors over a long period of time, the adrenals basically got tired and stopped producing cortisol, and this is where the term adrenal fatigue came from. So where does this idea of the adrenals pooping out actually come from? So the idea stems from what was known as the four stages of adrenal fatigue from a doctor and researcher called Hans Seil, if I'm pronouncing that right, I hope so. But basically, first, you see high levels of cortisol in response to stress, along with DHEA and pregnenolone hormones, which are produced by the adrenal glands in response to stress. Then over time, as the chronic stressors pile on, those hormones begin to decline. So at first you have high cortisol, which then begins to drop gradually as we progress through what are called stages 2 and 3 of adrenal fatigue, where cortisol and DHEA fall below the normal range, until finally in the last stage, stage 4, we've reached what is known, or what was formerly known, as adrenal failure or exhaustion, where cortisol, DHEA, and pregnenolone are all very low. And so if you look farther into this, Chris Kresser explains that researchers over time basically evolved this original idea that to project by stage 4, the adrenal glands were basically tired out from producing so much cortisol over time that they eventually lost their ability to produce it anymore, hence the name adrenal fatigue. But now, with all of the scientific research and studies on this that have been done in the past couple of years, We know that this isn't an entirely accurate picture of what is really happening with cortisol and the adrenals in the body. So we're going to get to what specifically is actually going on with the adrenals and stress response later. But first, I want to explain to you guys exactly how cortisol and the stress response is supposed to work in healthy people so that we can understand what happens when it goes wrong. So basically, on a typical day in a healthy person, your cortisol levels look a little bit like this. They begin to rise in the morning to help you get out of bed and be awake. They then continue to rise and peak around noon at midday and begin to decline throughout the rest of the day so that by nighttime you can wind down and go to sleep at night. So cortisol is a really important regulatory factor that goes in sync with our circadian or sleep-wake cycle rhythms. Wow, can't speak English today. It's fine. So it makes sense that cortisol would be the highest when the sun is normally at its brightest during the day and then would gradually taper off as the sun goes down so we can fall asleep at night. Now, with adrenal fatigue or HPA axis dysregulation, cortisol levels throughout the day become all messed up. So a lot of people will experience that what they call a tired and wired feeling, where you literally can't get out of bed in the morning without a cup of coffee to wake you basically from the dead. But then when you try to fall asleep at night, even though your body is totally exhausted, you feel like you get a burst of energy and can't fall asleep, and the cycle just continues. Going back to the old theory, people believed that after prolonged exposure to chronic stress, the adrenals became tired and stopped producing cortisol, which we now know, with lots more research, is not entirely true and doesn't tell the whole story. So just so you know, there is a very rare condition in which the adrenals do stop producing cortisol. It's called Addison's disease, and it's an autoimmune condition where antibodies actually attack the adrenal glands, which is similar to Hashimoto's thyroiditis, where the body attacks the thyroid gland. And Addison's causes adrenal insufficiency, and the adrenals then don't produce enough cortisol. But this is not what's happening with adrenal fatigue or HPA axis dysregulation or whatever you want to call it. And Addison's is so rare that this is not something that people that are experiencing the symptoms of adrenal fatigue are having. So here's the thing. A lot of people who experience all these symptoms of adrenal fatigue don't actually have low cortisol. If you've read any of Chris Kresser's work on adrenal fatigue, he explains how saliva cortisol tests, which is the normal test that naturopaths will use to measure your cortisol and thus the stage of adrenal fatigue that you might be in. So these tests only measure about 3-5% of the total cortisol that's available in the body. So if you get one of these tests, while it may show that your cortisol levels are low, your cortisol production in total may actually be within the normal range or high, yet these people are still experiencing all of the telltale symptoms of so-called adrenal fatigue. Then on the other hand, there are a ton of people experiencing these symptoms who do have low cortisol, but this isn't because the adrenals got pooped out and so tired that they're unable to produce it anymore. The production of cortisol is actually controlled by the brain, your central nervous system, the pituitary gland, the hypothalamus, and a bunch of specific hormonal regulatory mechanisms that go along with those, not the adrenal glands themselves. So the problem here is actually further up than the adrenals. So if it's not the adrenals getting tired and producing less cortisol, what the heck is going on? So right now, I want to break down a little bit of the physiology of what's really going on in the body for you in an easy to understand way. We're going to talk about the main way that your body deals with stress. So the HPA axis that we've been talking about is your body's intermediate to long-term response to stress. Its long name is the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, also known as the HPA. So let's break that down a little bit. The H part refers to the hypothalamus, which is the body's master endocrine gland, where a lot of what are called releasing hormones are stored. So these hormones act as signals to tell other hormones in different parts of the body what to do, like your cortisol, sex hormones, growth hormone, thyroid hormone. The P part of the HPA axis is for the pituitary gland, which is the hormone or the gland that's actually responsible for telling the hypothalamus and all of those releasing hormones in the hypothalamus what to do and when to do them. And then the A part, obviously, is for the adrenal glands, where the hormones like cortisol, aldosterone, which controls your sodium reabsorption in your urine, epinephrine, and norepinephrine are stored, which are the hormones that your body releases in response to stress. So from here on out, we're obviously going to refer to the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis as the HPA axis for short, because it's much easier to say, and I'm probably going to get even more tongue-tied than I already am about 100 more times if I tried to say that whole thing every single time. So again, the HPA axis is the body's main governor of the stress response. On a hormonal level, stress activates the HPA axis, which then leads to the release of hormones and neurotransmitters, which are brain chemicals, like cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine, which are also known as noradrenaline and adrenaline, which we now know are all housed in the adrenal glands. So each stressor in modern life activates the same stress response system in your body, whether it's a huge stressor or a little one. So for example, if you're walking across the street and a car swerves towards you and almost hits you, the biological response in your body is your heart rate jumps, your pulse starts racing, your blood sugar spikes, your muscles tense, and the blood in circulation is shunted from the digestive system and your reproductive system to the muscular system, aka it goes to your legs and arms, so that you can run and jump out of the way. This, obviously, is a good response for the body to have in the short term because it helped you survive. Spoiler alert, you didn't die. But if this same response with all those biological changes happens every time you experience any kind of stressor, your body will eventually reach a certain threshold where this response actually becomes detrimental. So some examples of these chronic stressors that we all deal with that all start to pile up can be if you're stuck in traffic, if you're answering stressful emails, trying to make deadlines at work, if you hate your job, if you have multiple jobs, or if you're trying to start your own business, which is a great thing but can definitely be stressful in itself, if you're having troubles in your relationships, if you're over-exercising, or if you're doing high-intensity exercise without focusing on recovery, if you're under-eating, eating an inflammatory diet, and all the things that can cause inflammation may be different for everyone, so keep that in mind. Another stressor can be if you're not sleeping enough, if you're drinking too much coffee or alcohol, if you're using your phone or electronics late at night, which throws off your circadian rhythms, if you're having money problems, even something as small as your phone running out of battery can all be major stressors onto the system when they start to pile up every single day. So the way that your body deals with stress in the short term, with the release of cortisol and the corresponding biological response that we talked about before, which protects you from acute or right now in the moment stressors, can definitely be helpful immediately. But if that response is continually activated and cortisol is continually released in response to low-level chronic stressors like the ones we were just talking about, it may actually be harmful to the body in the long term because it depletes your body's ability to respond to stress in the same way every time. So the way the stress response is supposed to work is this. Your body responds to a stressor by releasing cortisol and epinephrine or adrenaline, which puts your body in fight or flight mode to help you run out of the way of traffic, away from a tiger, or away from your boss that you just don't want to deal with right now. Whatever it is that you're stressed about. And then soon after that stressor ends, your cortisol will eventually go back down to a regular maintenance level known as rest and digest mode. So we are designed as humans to be in rest and digest mode most of the time. However, in the modern age, with all these chronic stressors of daily life, most people are in some level of fight or flight mode almost all the time, or at least multiple times a day from all of those stressors that we've described before. You know how on some days, when your bullshit tolerance level is just much generally lower than other days and you literally just can't deal with anyone or anything and it feels like one little thing could just push you over the edge? A similar thing is going on here with your body's continual release of cortisol and corresponding ability to respond to stress. So there's a threshold of chronic stress, or like your bullshit meter, basically, that your body can handle before shit starts hitting the fan, in the form of a dysregulation of cortisol output. So sometimes it's too much or too little overall. Sometimes it's too little cortisol in the morning, so you can't get out of bed. Sometimes it's too much at night, so you can't fall asleep, which is that tired and wired feeling. And a disruption in the production of other hormones and brain chemicals known as neurotransmitters that are involved with the HPA axis, like DHEA, melatonin, which helps regulate your sleep, epinephrine, thyroid hormone, sex hormones. This can all happen when we're experiencing chronic stress. And just a quick note about stress and cortisol here, because I know what you're thinking right now, like, oh my God, we have to avoid all stress and we have to avoid any spike in cortisol because these are the things that are making us sick. Neither stress nor cortisol is evil, and they are not your enemies. Stress is not a bad thing. The body's stress response was designed to help you survive. Stress and cortisol, aka your body's response to stress, is what keeps you alive so you can respond to external threats and save yourself from a bear running after you, or running out of traffic, or away from your boss that you don't like, or swerving away from a car coming towards you in traffic. Stress is also inevitable. There will always be some kind of stress going on in your life, and the best thing that you can do is to learn how to manage it. The only time when stress becomes a major problem is when you start to cross that threshold that your body can tolerate. And then things start to go downhill because your body is trying to protect you from the long-term detrimental effects of too much stress or too much cortisol in your system. But cortisol isn't your enemy either. It helps regulate blood sugar, your immune system, helps you metabolize proteins, fats, and carbohydrates. It helps you obviously respond to stress, since that's what we've been talking about this entire podcast so far. It gives you energy, like the natural spike in the morning to help wake you up. And it can be a powerful anti-inflammatory agent. Cortisol itself is not the problem. The problem is when you have the constant spike of cortisol due to exposure to stressors on a chronic level that can lead your body to losing sensitivity to cortisol, which can actually suppress your immune response. That's the problem. This is why chronic stress actually contributes to disease via dysregulation of the HPA axis, which, remember, is your body's regulation mechanism for long-term stress. This is where we start to see that shitstorm of symptoms that is commonly referred to as adrenal fatigue. Because it's not just the adrenals that are being affected, but every body system and gland that is influenced or regulated by the hypothalamus, the pituitary, or the adrenals, including the thyroid, the gut, the brain, your metabolism, the male and female sex reproductive systems, all of those things. But again, it's not that the adrenals are getting tired or fatigued because they're so overwhelmed with the stressors that they stop producing cortisol. So adrenal fatigue really isn't a very scientifically accurate term. So what the heck is actually going on here? There are two main mechanisms that may be going on in response to these chronic stressors that are causing the symptoms for the artist formerly known as adrenal fatigue. And that can be the downregulation of the HPA axis, or it can be cortisol resistance. And in both instances, the body is trying to adapt to be more efficient at dealing with chronic stress. It's actually doing its job by trying to protect you and help you survive. Let's dig into this a little bit deeper. So most people with adrenal fatigue, as we've said before, don't have low cortisol output by the adrenal glands. And the adrenal glands are rarely fatigued even if there is a low output of cortisol. So the brain, via the pituitary and the hypothalamus, is actually telling the adrenals to produce or release less cortisol into circulation. They didn't lose their ability to produce it. So when we're exposed to stressors, both big and small, whether we perceive them as being a negative stress or not, for example, a high-intensity workout that makes you feel really good, this is still a form of physical stress on the body. The body has some built-in mechanisms that it uses to try and protect us from the effects of a continual release of high cortisol that results from these stressors. So to adapt, the body decreases the sensitivity of the receptors that are involved in the HPA axis or cortisol release pathway in response to stress. And remember, this is designed to be protective for the body. It's trying to prevent any harm coming to you from this continuous exposure to high cortisol from the stress that you are bringing on your own body. The sucky part about this is that this protective measure actually ends up leading to a decreased ability to produce or release cortisol in the face of future stress, again, directed by the hypothalamus and pituitary in the brain, not by the adrenals getting too tired to produce cortisol. So the way that this works is through what is called a negative feedback loop. And the easiest way to explain this is, for example, the thermostat in your house. So if you set the temperature to 70 degrees Fahrenheit in your house and it goes too far above that, the AC will kick in and then bring the temperature back down because it knows it doesn't need to turn the heat on because the temperature is too high already. So it's trying to bring it back down into balance. So in relation to stress and the HPA axis, when cortisol is released in response to stress, it will circulate in the blood for a couple hours after the stressor is experienced. Eventually, that cortisol gets into your brain, which activates this negative feedback loop to cool the system down, to use the thermostat analogy. It tells the hypothalamus to stop releasing the hormone that tells cortisol to go into circulation in response to stress. So basically, the body is using this negative feedback loop to turn off the stress response when it thinks there's already enough cortisol in circulation. Because if we have enough, the body doesn't need to produce any more. That would be inefficient, and the body is always trying to be as efficient as possible. So here's the problem. When you have HPA axis dysregulation or adrenal fatigue, this negative feedback loop is getting messed up because either the hypothalamus isn't sending the signal in the first place to have the adrenals produce cortisol, which results in a low cortisol output, or it keeps sending the signal even in the presence of high cortisol, which results in a continuously very high cortisol output. So that was the downregulation of the HPA axis and the way that it normally functions. So now let's talk about cortisol resistance, which can be the other thing that's going on in relation to adrenal fatigue. So these chronically high cortisol levels can lead to something that's called cortisol resistance, which is caused by a decrease in cortisol receptor sensitivity, as we talked about above. So while the body is trying to protect you against the effects of high cortisol, it actually ends up leading to low cortisol levels in the body over time because if the receptors are less sensitive or if the body has a decreased number of receptors for cortisol, which the body will sometimes do, then there's only a certain amount of cortisol that is able to get into those receptors. And as a result, the body will release much less cortisol into circulation because it thinks that you don't need as much to get into those receptors. So now you're like, what the heck? My body is betraying me with this response. What is going on? But really, when your body starts to release less cortisol in response to stress, it is doing exactly what the body is designed to do, adapting so you can survive. It's a really protective mechanism similar to shivering when your body is cold to heat you up or jerking away from a heat source so that you don't get burned. This is a hormonal or metabolic adaptation in response to a certain agent that would normally result in a situation that the body doesn't want. So to give another example that might shed more light on this, when you do extended cardio exercise like long runs, bike rides, or whatever you like to do, the body is trying to become more efficient at burning whatever fuel you have because it doesn't know when the next fuel is going to come in. So over time, the hormonal or metabolic adaptation here is to slow your metabolism down so that it takes more time to burn through the same amount of fuel so that you can run and go for longer without having to refuel. Now, slowing the metabolism down is not what we may want, especially if you're trying to exercise to lose weight or to speed up your metabolism, but the body is actually doing exactly what it's designed to do, to survive and to be as efficient as possible at surviving by adapting to the current situation. So cortisol resistance is also really similar to how the body responds to a constant intake of refined high glycemic carbohydrates and sugars with insulin resistance, which, if left untreated, can lead to metabolic syndrome and even diabetes. So in relation to the adrenals, when the body is constantly exposed to low-level stress every day, multiple times a day, it wants to become more efficient at that stress response so it doesn't feel like you have to run from a bear every single time you get stuck in traffic, are late to a meeting, get an urgent phone call, etc. So adrenal fatigue might not be real in the sense that the adrenals don't get tired out and stop producing cortisol. But in HPA axis dysregulation, the body is becoming less sensitive to the constant release of cortisol accompanying a high-stress lifestyle, and the brain stops sending as many signals to the adrenals to release cortisol because there's already so much flowing in circulation. But as we very well know, stress is a very well understood underlying cause of illness. And honestly, no matter what we call it, the symptoms that people are experiencing here, whether you call it adrenal fatigue or you call it cortisol resistance or HPA axis dysregulation or downregulation, the symptoms are the same. And the treatments are going to be very similar because if you're doing a treatment that is actually going to work, it has to get back to the root cause of addressing the stress that got us here in the first place. And because this episode has been very dense already, that's exactly what we're going to talk about in the next podcast on adrenal fatigue. Because this episode has probably been long enough for you already, your brain might be hurting, it might have been slightly confusing, / blowing your mind about everything you thought you knew about adrenal fatigue. So what I think I'm going to do here, because I have a ton more things that I want to talk about and cover, is I'm going to turn this into a series of episodes where we're going to do a much deeper dive into a bunch of the different facets of adrenal fatigue. So we'll talk about the causes, how to know if you have it or how to test for it effectively, what you can do about it, my personal story with adrenal fatigue and HPA axis dysregulation, clinical experience. I also plan on having some guests on the show to specifically talk about it. And obviously, we're going to talk about what you can do about it. And I'll probably also do a listener questions episode on adrenal fatigue since you guys seem to be super interested in this topic. So send your questions my way. And again, just for you podcast listeners, because I want you guys to be the first to hear it, I am going to take, I think I have space for 2, maybe 3 more clinical nutrition clients if this is something you're really interested in working on in the next couple of months. So definitely email me or reach out to me in some way if you are interested in that. So I hope you enjoyed this episode because I love talking about this kind of stuff and I can't wait to keep going with this topic for you guys. As always, you can find me at realfoodwithdana.com, realfoodwithdana on Instagram and Facebook. And if you love this episode, share it with a friend. It doesn't have to be over Facebook or Instagram or anything. Tell your sister about it. Tell your friend about it. Tell your mom about it. Tell somebody who keeps asking you those questions that you don't know how to answer about adrenal fatigue about it. And if you enjoyed the episode, please remember to go over to iTunes and leave me a 5-star rating and review so we can help other people with adrenal fatigue and all these awesome things that we're talking about. Okay, bye.